All right, so you're here with us on the Depth Dive because you're the kind of person who wants to, get to the bottom of things right. You want to understand like the big picture without like getting stuck in a million little details.
Exactly. You want that satisfying aha moment when it all clicks.
Right, exactly. And today we're going to try to do that with a really transformative period in Western thought. We're talking about the Enlightenment.
Yeah, and to help us understand it, you've brought in a great lecture from Dr. Roger Green, and it's all about how the Enlightenment really changed how people saw the church and thought about Christianity.
Totally. And I think that's what we really want to get at today, right? Like for you, the listener, like how did the Enlightenment lead to, Christianity and the church kind of losing some of their, their power and importance in Western society? We're going to dig into those big criticisms and how thinking changed, especially across Western Europe and America, all based on Dr. Green's analysis.
Okay, so to understand how big this shift was, Dr. Green kind of, lays out the groundwork, right? What was the Enlightenment anyway?
Yeah, so like if we're going to dive into this deep dive, you got to, start at the start, right?
Okay.
So the Enlightenment was this period that really got going in the 17th century. And the big thing was this focus on reason and like rational thought, trying to apply it to like everything in life. I mean, they even called the 17th century the Age of Reason.
Right, but here's the thing, and Dr. Green makes this point. As the 18th century rolls around, you start to see some thinkers questioning if reason was like enough, especially when it came to faith and religious life. It's not just about using reason, but whether reason has all the answers, particularly when you start thinking about spiritual stuff.
Yeah, that's a really key point. And that kind of brings us to these big philosophical ideas that were changing things. And Dr. Green really highlights John Locke and Immanuel Kant as like super important figures in this whole like shift in thinking.
Yeah, John Locke, who lived kind of in the late 1600s and early 1700s, right? He's like the poster child for empiricism. It's like imagine a newborn baby, right? Totally blank slate. Locke saying, all our knowledge comes from our experiences. That's empiricism in a nutshell.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. And Dr. Green points this out for Locke. Like, the way people started thinking about understanding God, it really started to move towards this thing called natural theology. So instead of just like reading the Bible, people started looking at the world around them, nature, the universe, and using that as the main way to understand God. That's natural theology. And it's a huge change from revealed theology, which focuses on God talking to us directly, through Jesus and the scriptures. This basically means the individual and what they see and figure out becomes more important than what the church is saying. That's a pretty fundamental shift in how people thought about belief.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that focus on the individual, like figuring things out for themselves, that's like the DNA of the Enlightenment. And then we move into the 18th century, we get Immanuel Kant. Now, Dr. Green describes him as like representing this moment where humanity is coming of age intellectually and reason becomes like the gold standard for how we interact with the world.
But Kant also realized that reason has its limits, right? He understood that knowing God wasn't something you could just like logic your way into. You needed faith too.
Absolutely. But Kant also like brings ethics and morality into this whole picture with his idea of the categorical imperative. It's kind of like, okay, imagine everyone just decided breaking promises was fine. If everyone did that all the time, like trust would just disappear.
Right.
That's the kind of thought experiment Kant used to figure out how we should act ethically. Like, what if everyone did this? Would it be good or bad?
So basically, Dr. Green's saying Kant's focus on ethics might have kind of accidentally led people to see religion as being mostly about just being a good person.
That's a really interesting point, because while being ethical and moral is important in most religions, Dr. Green suggests this focus might have made some people back then kind of miss the other big parts of religious belief, like the nature of God or what Jesus means or the role of the church itself. Like the focus shifted to how you act as an individual. And sometimes that meant people weren't thinking as much about like the deeper theology.
Okay, so we see this shift towards reason and individual experience. But how did these new ideas actually play out in different places? Dr. Green starts by looking at England and the rise of deism.
Right, in deism, it's not like a specific church or anything. It was more like a philosophical and religious viewpoint that got really popular in England during the Enlightenment and later on influenced some thinking in America.
And deists had a very particular view of God, right? Like Dr. Green mentions this idea of a watchmaker God. Like God created the world like a perfect clock and then just lets it run without interfering.
Exactly. And Dr. Green actually lays out six key characteristics of deism. So first, they believed in one God, like a creator God. Second, they really emphasized free will, which is a big difference from the Calvinist idea of predestination. Third, they thought living a virtuous, ethical life was crucial, and reason was the key to figuring out what was virtuous. Fourth, they believed in an afterlife where good and bad actions had consequences, although they weren't always clear on the specifics. Fifth reason was super important to them in everything, religion, politics, you name it. And finally, that sixth one we touched on with Locke natural theology, understanding God through nature.
But Dr. Green also points out this big problem for deism. How do you explain all the bad stuff in the world? You know, natural disasters, diseases. If God's this perfect watchmaker, why is there so much chaos and suffering? Doesn't really fit with the idea of a perfect design, does it?
Yeah, that's the tough question for natural theology. If you're only looking at the world around you to understand God, how do you make sense of the bad stuff along with the good? Dr. Green also notes that deism eventually played a role in the development of Unitarianism.
To really understand how deism worked in practice, Dr. Green introduces us to two important deist writers from England, John Tolan and Matthew Tyndall.
Yeah, so John Tolan wrote this book called Christianity Not Mysterious, which was like a deism starter pack. He argued that there's nothing about Christianity that can't be understood by human reason. No miracles, no big mysteries that we can't figure out with our brains.
That was a pretty wild idea back then. And then you've got Matthew Tyndall, who wrote Christianity as Old as Creation, which basically puts reason front and center in how we understand religion.
What's interesting here is that Tyndall straight up rejected biblical miracles and any kind of divine revelation that goes beyond what we can observe in the world. If you couldn't figure it out through reason, it wasn't true. Dr. Green points out that this led deists to pick and choose what they believed from the Bible, accepting the parts that made sense to them and tossing out anything that seemed irrational or miraculous.
And their view of Jesus was pretty specific too, right? They basically saw him as a good moral teacher, someone to admire and try to be like.
Which Dr. Green connects to C.S. Lewis's famous argument from Mere Christianity, the liar, lunatic, or Lord thing. Lewis basically said, if Jesus claimed to be divine, you can't just say he was a good teacher. You have to consider the other possibilities, which are a lot more significant. It really highlights the problem with the deist view of Jesus if you take his own claim seriously.
Okay, so that's England and deism. Now, Dr. Green takes us to France, where things get a lot more intense. He calls it naturalism.
Yeah, and he really emphasizes how the Enlightenment in France was a lot more radical, a lot less restrained than in England. They were much more willing to directly challenge the church.
And you can't ignore the fact that the church had a ton of power and wealth in France back then. Dr. Green mentions they owned like a quarter of all the land in 1789, right before the French Revolution. That's a lot of influence, and it probably didn't make them very popular.
No kidding. Owning that much land would definitely create some resentment, and that kind of anti-establishment feeling was already brewing. Dr. Green introduces us to Benedict Spinoza, whose views on religion and the Bible were even more critical than the English deists.
Dr. Green describes Spinoza as developing a form of pantheism, which is this idea that God isn't separate from the world, but is actually the universe itself, like the sacred is within everything.
Yeah, that's a big difference from traditional monotheism, where God is seen as distinct from his creation. And then we get Voltaire, who was like even more against Christianity and the church than Spinoza. He's famous for saying, crush the infamy, which kind of shows you how strongly he felt.
So Voltaire basically thought the core of religion was just morality and ethics. He wanted to strip away all the dogma and the whole church structure.
And it's important to understand that Voltaire's criticism was very sharp and pointed. He wasn't messing around. Then still in France, we meet Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who Dr. Green points out was actually born in Switzerland, but had a huge impact on France and later America.
And Rousseau brings something a little different to the table. Dr. Green highlights two key ideas from him that really made a difference. Firstly, Rousseau was all about feelings and inner experience as being like the real heart of religion. He was moving away from that purely rational focus of earlier Enlightenment thinkers. It was a shift towards the emotional side of things.
So in a way, Rousseau's pushing back against the idea that reason is the only way to find truth, and that focus on emotions and intuition kind of foreshadows the romantic movement that came later.
Exactly. And secondly, Rousseau thought we needed to get back to nature, and he had this idea of the noble savage who lived in harmony with the world. He was criticizing all the artificiality and corruption he saw as society became more industrialized.
Okay, so when we look back at all the criticisms aimed at the church and Christianity during the Enlightenment, as Dr. Green lays it out, we can see a few major themes popping up.
Yeah, that emphasis on reason over revelation and faith is huge, right? Along with all the questions about miracles and traditional teachings. We also see that shift towards natural theology becoming more prominent, and this growing focus on individual experience as being the foundation for how we understand God.
Really makes you think about how these old tensions between reason, faith, and the role of religious institutions are still so relevant today. Like, we're still grappling with these questions.
And that brings us to a really big question for you to think about. How does understanding how the Enlightenment criticized the church affect how we view the relationship between personal belief, organized religion, and our pursuit of knowledge today? Maybe digging deeper into the writings of Locke, Kant, and those French Enlightenment thinkers could give you some more insights into that.
I think it's a great place to leave it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.